live. Welcome, folks. It is Monday, October the 13th, 2025. That just sounds kind of crazy. Like, we're actually really close to me saying it's someday in 2026. It just seems outrageous, given this little journey we take together called the Survival Podcast began in 2008. I have a lot more beard and a lot grayer beard. For those that are tuning into a video today for the first time, at least in a while, the reason for the beard is I haven't lost my mind or anything. We're doing the play Santa Claus thing this year, and we believe that the beard got white enough that all it needed was a start growing in July, and I've had my hairstylist working on it for me to get it very Santa-like, and it's starting to really form up, and I'm hoping it's all the way there by Thanksgiving this year to have fun with the family and friends. Anyway, we're not talking about that today. In fact, we're talking about if there's such thing as Santa Claus, the anti-Santa Claus, things being taken away from you and reclaiming them and getting them back. Today's show is called Living in Your Circle of Control. Now, for me, this goes all the way back many, many years prior to even doing the Survival Podcast. When I was a young guy coming up in the business world, there was a lot of people kept telling me, you need to read Seven Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. And when enough people tell you something, even if you're not really looking forward to it, you go do it. I never actually read it way back then. I eventually did read the whole book. But way back then, you know, I was in a bookstore. I said, well, I'll go look at this book. And I figured, well, I'll grab the book. I'll buy a coffee. This is back when you had, you know, cafes and bookstores and stuff like that. I go sit in one of these big plush things and I'll read the book. Or at least I'll, you know, read key chapters or something like that. I'll make my own cliff notes. Pull the book down. Opened it to a random page, something I do thanks to the book called Illusions by Richard Bach from time to time. And there it is. Two circles. One was concern and one was influence. And then I read the accompanying note and it said that people who spend most of their time inside their circle of influence do better than people who worry about their circle of concern. And further, the more you spend time in your circle of influence, which was a smaller circle inside the great big circle of concern, the bigger your influence circle gets, whereas the concern circle pretty much stays the same. You got the same crap to worry about all the time. The key difference being not whether or not it's worthy of your attention, but is there anything you do about it? You know, if the sex lives of celebrities or a politician taking a bribe or whatever, you're not going to do anything about it. So why spend time there? Later, I developed motivational talks for a variety of reasons. And as I was putting it together, I started thinking about it, said, you know, really what's more powerful than influence is control. Like I can influence you, but I can't control you. I can't control my son, right? I can't control my grandchildren. I mean, to a degree you can, but not really. You can't control your kids. And I mean, fully 100% control your kids. You can't control the person on the other end of the phone. You just can't. Even your employees, you think you have control over them, and they leave, and they talk about you, and they do all kinds of things you wish they didn't do. Ask any sergeant in the Army how hard it is to control people, and he's got military authority. Right? Why do you think there's a safety briefing every weekend? They'd have to tell you the same damn thing, because you can't control people. But you can control you. So I started doing my presentations with three circles in them. Influence, concern, and control. Turned out, I was not alone. I've actually seen many people do that since, and I do not think they got the idea from me. I just think it's an obvious thing. And I've gone now. I don't even talk about circle of influence. I don't worry about it. You control what you control, that begets the influence, right? And the influence begets caring less about everything outside of your control. So today, this we're going to talk about. And I want to say something. You know, when I think it was Billy Bond's show I was on. Or maybe it was Tom Woods' show that I was on to talk about the book when Laws of Life came out. This is one of the laws in Laws of Life, my book. You know, focus on the things that you can control. And after the episode, I went to see, you know, comments, and there was some clear Gen Zs in the comments. This isn't worth listening to. All it says is be on time and control what you control. And I just asked that person, I said, did you even give any thought about what things you control are? They got really mad and yelled and screamed and ran away. You know, that's the way it is for some people. They're not ready for this. I'm betting this audience is more than ready for this. This will be a little bit of jack off the top rope with the elbow to the head, but actually kind of mild compared to some episodes. That's what we're going to talk about today. This is definitely in the vein of episodes about lifestyle design. With that, before we get into it, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day number one today is JM Bullion. These guys have been a sponsor since 2013. That would be 12 years. 12 years in the world of podcasting is a long time. Most podcasts don't last 5 years, let alone 12 years. But they have had a long-term relationship with us. They've always been good about taking care of this audience. And one thing you do control is how you invest your money. Silver and gold are great stores of value. They have been for thousands of years, and that's not going to change anytime soon. Silver and gold have been both on a tear in the last year. Silver cresting $50 an ounce. Silver passing its all-time high that came when? 1982. 1982 was always an aberration. That's when the Hunt brothers tried to corner the silver market. So it is just really both of these assets are doing great. You should be stacking them. You know, and do it over time like anything else. We even have a discount for members of the MSB for JM Bullion purchases, so check them out today. Next up today is Start Nine Sovereign Computers. When I was talking about silver and gold, if you're new, you might be like, Jack, you're talking about silver and gold, and he's supposed to be a Bitcoin guy. I am a Bitcoin guy. And one of the cool things about Start Nine is you can run your own Bitcoin node, and you can run your own Lightning node. So you can actually manage Bitcoin fully, both on-chain and with the Lightning off-chain side-chain stuff. You can do all that, but you can do a whole bunch of other things. Store your files fully encrypted and access them from anywhere in the world with an app on your phone or from any computer anywhere. That would be one example of what you can do with Start9. Imagine that, not relying on the cloud, which is just somebody else's computer. You can set up fully encrypted, military-grade end-to-end messaging that not only is it impossible to decrypt, it's really almost impossible to find. Unless you invite them to, because it's your app, you run on your server. You see how that works? Start9 is a way to take back your technology. It is a really great system. And if you can plug some cables in, follow some instructions, and use a smartphone, you can do it. It's really not that hard. Check them out today at start9.com. They do a discount for MSB members of 9%. That will pay for your MSB for about 2 years with the lowest end server that they offer. And we'll pay for it significantly with the larger enterprise class server that they have as well. So check them out today at start9.com. And remember, they actually do a discount with Fold. If you use the Fold card, Fold gift cards for Start9, you could stack those and save, I think it's about 13, 14% total by the time it's all said and done. All right, with that, let's go ahead and get into the main topic of today's show. And again, we're talking about what do you control versus what you don't control. And this might be, when it comes down to it, this is the survival podcast. And when we talk about survival here, we do go apocalyptic sometimes because it's always a possibility, but the probability is low. This show is built on probably the longest, clunkiest, but best catchphrase that's long and clunky ever developed, helping you live a better life if times get tougher, even if they don't. Early on, that was the thing that hooked more people than anything else to the programming that we put out. Back when I was in my car doing an audio-only show with no video, no real support, no whatever, you just got an audio download off of iTunes or Spotify or whatever, that was the thing that most people that became fans and started contacting me said resonated with them. It wasn't crazy lunatic stuff, fringe stuff, right? It wasn't, oh, the world is ending, you're all going to die, right? It was like, hey, look, bad stuff happens. And the more logically we design our life, the more redundancies that we put in place, the better we'll deal with the bad things, not if they happen, but when they happen. We also always talked about it from this standpoint, the shit hitting the fan. And in, you know, prepper space, the shit hit the fan is always the zombie apocalypse. And it's, of course, the zombies are a metaphor. It could be a bank collapse. It could be a real pandemic, not the COVID bullshit we just had. And a bunch of other scenarios that people come up with that are all possible. Now, again, not necessarily probable, but possible. But as we built this show, we realized that the more you did to deal with the shit hit the fans that happen every day, the better off you became no matter what happened. And what I mean by that is the shit hits the fan for somebody every day. Every day. When you are up to your eyeballs in debt, you can barely pay your rent, and you go to work, and your boss says, I'm sorry, I have to let you go. The shit has hit the fan for you. When you go to a doctor, and the doctor says, I hate to tell you, sir, but you have stage 4 cancer, the shit has hit the fan for you. When they tell you the same thing about your child, the shit really hits the fan. When a giant storm comes into your town and floods your house, the shit has hit the fan for you. When you come home to your home and you're like, I can't wait to be home, and you see smoke, and by the time you pull on your street, you start to really have a sinking pit in your stomach, and you don't want any of your neighbors to suffer either, but as you're getting closer, it's not them, and it's you, the shit has hit the fan. There are thousands of ways that the shit hits the fan for various people on various days. And that is why we spend so much time not talking about storing food, because you store the food. You're done. You did it. Right? You don't have enough. Keep doing it. You have enough, and then rotate it through. It's easy. No, lifestyle design is complex. And lifestyle design really hits on living a better life if times get tough, or even if they don't. Because if we're not doing things, betting on success and only betting on failure, then success becomes failure. Have you ever thought about it that way? If you do all your prepping from a standpoint of, I'm only worried about shit hitting the fan, right? Even if it's pragmatic, even if it's like, it's more likely to have a storm than the zombie apocalypse, you still are only planning for failure. And if you only plan for failure, then every action you take is only predicated on being useful in an event of failure. Hence, your life gets no better. Your circle of control is where you make your life better. Now, this is going to be hard for the younger segment of the audience today. I already know that. I'm going to have somebody yell at me either in the live stream or by, you know, one of those pounding, you can hear the keyboard clacking from the angry 22-year-old who knows way more than you do, right? Like, that's just great, you know. You don't know anything. I don't know. I've been around for half a century. You've been around for a quarter. I might know about double as much as you do because I've been through this shit, right? But it's the truth. And here's the thing. We have problems. Yes, those problems are worse than 20 years ago. And 20 years ago, people like me were saying it was bad now and would get worse. And we were all told to shut the F up. You're nuts. You're crazy. You're a conspiracy theorist. It's all going to be fine. Bill Clinton's going to save the planet or whatever, right? And son of a gun, it happened. It got really bad. And yes, it is worse than it was 20 years ago. It's definitely worse than it was 40 years ago in many measurable ways. It's also better than it was 20 years ago and better than it was 40 years ago in many measurable ways. There is very bad situations we're in. We're going to talk about a few of them today, and then we're going to get on with, well, what do you do about it? What do you control? But one thing I got to say again, because there's just such a meme on this now, it is not the fucking boomer's fault that you can't buy a house, you 25-year-old whizzling, crying little bitch. Your grandpa is not why you can't buy a house. He never was. In fact, he had very little to do with anything as to why you can't buy a house. If you want to know the real reason you can't buy a house, you need to go to one day and one day only in 1971. That was the last bit of what was left of a currency that made sense. And every fucking problem we have, from the cost of housing to the cost of tuition in college to the cost of medicine and insurance, food, everything, all goes back to that fucking date. Remember that date, because I'm going to give you a book to read at the end of this episode that's going to take you right into that and more. Now, it was already a problem, though. Do you know, well, the gold backed the dollar in 71, 40%. That was the required reserve, was 40%. So we already inflated the currency 60% beyond the reserve. That's why we ended up in a trap. Johnson, Lyndon B. Johnson, completely fucked it up. Even Nixon, I know you were taught to hate Nixon by the TV and your history teacher, and there's a lot to hate about Nixon, but he didn't do this. No, and Johnson didn't do all of it. He just killed it. He absolutely crushed it. The only guy from 1913 forward that actually tried to do anything was freaking JFK, and they blew his head off. You take from that what you want. But the boomers didn't do this to you. You know who was in charge in 1971? The GI generation and the silent generation. And they didn't have much to say about it either. It's the elite have always done this. But even if you want to get the elite within the generation, it's the silence and the GIs. Right? And I'm going to tell you something, Gen Zs. 50 years from now, there's going to be some new generation bullshit, and they're going to say it's all your fault. And you'll be like, what? Yeah. Yeah, that's how your boomer friends feel now. The problem is worse because it began in 1913. at the real level that we're at. 1913 was the now there's some things that happened prior to that, but that was the true inflection point. That was when the Federal Reserve took over the control of our monetary system. Roosevelt completely took it into some bullshit in 1933, and then Nixon called time of death in 1971. That's how long it's been going on. So when you start yelling about the boomers, the average boomer was, you know, freaking late teens, early 20s in 1971. If you're in your late teens or early 20s right now, how much fucking say do you have about what goes on in the world? Yeah, that's how much they had, too. In fact, they had a lot less because, just be honest, they'd be pretty afraid to freaking run a draft right now. And when they ran a draft back then, the boomers, most of them showed up and went and did their duty in a war that they knew they probably shouldn't be involved in. So, yeah, you probably have more control right now than the boomers had when they were your age, guys. Here's the big thing. There's no going back. No one's coming to save you. Nothing's going to get fixed. It's only be future shifts. And those shifts will have opportunities. And when those opportunities are exploited by the people who are willing to do it, and everything does improve, they'll say, look, it worked. And it won't be. It will just be all their fuck-ups cannot overpower the force of the actual market underneath of it. Sooner or later, the timeline will heal because people will get tired of being miserable and decide to do something about it. That's all I'm suggesting you do. And here's the big thing. Bitching about it won't help you. Only your actions will. This is from the world of self-defense. It doesn't matter why you're in a shitty situation. When you are, everything is your responsibility. So you have been conditioned to believe that if something happened bad to you and you really didn't do anything, and most of you did do something, but let's just say you didn't. You're miserable for no reason other than the whole world is mean to you. It doesn't matter. Because you feel that you're the victim, you think somebody should fix it. Well, I think your fairy fucking godmother should ride a unicorn to your house, slide down a fucking rainbow, and grant you three wishes. Guess what? It ain't happening. It's not happening. It's not. You can vote in all the socialists you want. They'll just make it worse. 10 years into it, you'd be like, why did I do that? I was a stupid kid. No, you were convinced that someone would fix it for you. The minute you accept that no one will fix it for you, you become unreachable by the message of, the rich should pay their fair share, right? They're never going to pay their share. They never do. They never will. That's the way that it is. Because rich people have money, money buys influence, and it doesn't matter. The rich didn't pay their share in the United States, USSR, the Soviet Socialist Republic. Probably the most pure form of communism. And there were still wealthy, billionaire, elite class people in the USSR. There were wealthy, elite class people in East Germany. There were wealthy elite class people in communist Yugoslavia. There are wealthy elite class people in China, currently being run by the Communist Party of China. They're not going to do it. They're not going to pay your way for you. It's not going to happen. It's like being in a kill box. It sucks that you're there. It's not your fault. It's your responsibility. If somebody came at you with a knife and tried to kill you, you'd fight back. You wouldn't stand there like, somebody should do something about this. I don't know. Maybe some people would today. Well, I'm not going to fight for myself. He has no right. That's zap. You're dead. Dumbass. That's what's happening to people right now. Except instead of being stabbed, instead of being cute, an acute thing, that it's so in your face and so deadly and so right now that even the dumbest of the dumb try to do something to prevent it. Nope, it's staying like a deer in the headlights because of slow motion wrecking and destruction of your life, your health, and your wealth. Let's do something about it. Let's step into the circle of control right now. What do you control? Building real world relationships and networks. You control that. It is so easy to think you have a lot of friends because you have a friend counter. Here's the thing. If somebody's your friend, now, if they're in Washington State and you're in Miami, Florida, and geography is why they wouldn't do it, they can still be your friend. We can still have friends that we communicate mostly with online means, but are they your real friend? This is how you know. If they did live 10 miles from your house and you called them on a Thursday and said, man, I'm getting evicted from my home. Don't worry about why. I'm getting evicted from my home. Saturday, I've got to get all my shit out. It has to be out by Saturday night. Can you please come help me move? Unless they were going to a wedding that was theirs or a funeral, they'd be like, bro, I'm there. That's a real friend. Anything that falls short of somebody that would help you move, anytime they don't have, like, legitimately, I really would, but I can't. It's not just made up. Then you got a real friend. If they won't do that for you, then they might even be friendly towards you. They might even be a valid, but they are not. That's to meet the threshold of what I call a friend, if you wouldn't do that. Because I would do that for any of my friends. And I would actually feel bad if there was some reason I couldn't do it. Like, well, man, sorry, I'm on a boat in the middle of the ocean. I can't, you know. I'm out of the country. I'm going to my parents' funeral or something. Like, that's the kind of thing I wouldn't do it for. Anything short of that kind of extreme, if I have a friend in that situation, it's not even out of context that I might not get on a damn plane to go help them do it if they were that bad of shape and they really needed it. That's a friend. So when you have friends like that, you can have broad networks of people that are not your friends, but you have connections to these other people and you can get a lot of things done. You have a lot of leverage. There is value in having people that are you're friendly with that you would call acquaintances or contemporaries. You have strong relationships with, but maybe they're not all the way to. See, I think one of the problems is we make the threshold for what we call a friend too low. My thing for a friend is pretty high. If your name is not in my phone with a number next to it and some picture, there's a secret about me. If you call me on my phone, when I look at the phone ringing, if I'm occupied doing something, but I could stop and take your call, when I look over there and I look at the phone and the caller ID, even if you're in the phone, if there's not a picture, if it's a blank icon, I don't pick the phone up. When your picture's in the phone, you become a real boy. Then I pick the phone up. That's friend. Everybody else is acquaintance. That doesn't mean I won't help you. Doesn't mean you won't help me. I'm not being a dick. I'm just saying, like, when somebody tells me I have about 300 friends, no, you don't. You have 300 people. You pick up the phone, ask them to come help you move, and they would come help you move. No? Okay, you don't have 300 friends. When I say friend, I mean Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday in Tombstone. I mean Doc Holliday when they asked him, what are you doing out here while you're dying of tuberculosis? And he said, Wyatt Earp is my friend. And one of the other guys tells him, hell, Doc, I got a lot of friends. And his only response is, I don't. So friends and networks, that you control. And who those friends are, and are they people that make you want to be a little bit better of a man or a woman? A friend is someone I'll spend my time with. A friend is someone I'll go fishing with for 8 hours. A friend is someone I'll take a road trip with. A friend is someone when I can do anything I want, I'll sit on my back porch and talk to them. And I'll do it consistently. That's a friend. I want all of those people to be a little bit better than me in some way. And I hope I'm a little bit better than them in some way. I don't mean an elitist way. I mean like the person that's much better about being sympathetic to other people's feelings. I want to be more like that because I'm not. You know, and I'm and hopefully my business acumen is something that could benefit them. We all rise higher when we have friends like that. That's also in my book. Next is learning, because it's going to be all over the map because there's so many things you can do that people don't. Learn how to cook, prep meat, etc. You know, I just saw a thing about how expensive it is even to eat ground beef on X. A gal said that they, or a guy, I don't remember if it's a gal or a guy, said they paid $9 a pound for ground meat. $9 a pound for plain old ground meat. I'm like, you know, I just put a bunch of ground meat in the freezer. I didn't go down the road like the guy's not ready to sell a cow yet this year. Right. So I'm kind of, you know, having to do the store bought meat thing. I went out and bought two briskets. I cut the points off them and cut them into mock short ribs so they could be braised, slow cooked, made into pot roast, whatever. Took the flats, trimmed them down until they were about 85-15 fat ratio. Threw that through the grinder. Rendered out the rest of the fat. Threw some of the fat in a bag and threw that in a freezer for when I get a lean ass piece of meat. And I need more fat to grind in with it, labeled that. And I paid $3.98 a pound for brisket. And it was trimmed. So it wasn't even, it wasn't a packer cut. It's up to you. That's just one little tiny step. But if you take a lot of little tiny steps like that, it can result in a couple hundred dollars a month that you can invest in your future. And the problem, I think one of the big problems people have, and we're talking more about investing in a minute, is because it's such a small number, $100, $150, $200, you know, a month, the young person, 25-year-old, can't see a way that that gets them out of where they are. I cannot tell you how important it is that you start investing money, start saving money in some way. I think Bitcoin's your best option, but do what you want. Funny thing that happens is it becomes a habit, and all of a sudden you look at the balance, and it's like a couple months, it's like $400, well, whatever. And then you look, and all of a sudden you got like $1,200 in there for 6 months, plus whatever the gains are. Wow. And you get up to about $2,000, and then something happens that normally would have been a fucking disaster. It's like a $400 event that you didn't plan on, and you only have to take the $200 you would have invested plus $200 out of your stack, and you pay it off, and something goes click. Oh, wait a minute. That never happened before. That was weird. And then you get greedy in the best way possible. The greedy in the best way possible is when you're doing something and it's working and it's not super risky, like leveraging your ass off on Fartcoin. Yeah, don't do that. A bunch of people found that shit out. They F8 and F0'd hard this weekend. You can look up that up if you're interested in what happened to the crypto bros. They got their asses handed to them, chopped off, all the way off. But when it's working, you get greedy this way. I want more. And you realize there's only one way to get more. Put more in there. And then what starts happening is every windfall, and you get extra money, you just cut it in half, and half goes into savings. You know what I mean? And then you think, do I even need to keep the other half? Right? Every time you pay off a bill, and you don't have that bill anymore, you start throwing that bill into your savings until you decide. It's your money. It's not gone. It's not like you're buying Fartcoin with it. You get to keep it. Right? And eventually you start to get a real buildup, and then you become focused, and then you become unstoppable. I'm going to tell you guys, this is the truth. Very early on, I would talk about debt, and I'd say if you pay off all your consumer level bullshit debt, you stay away from credit cards other than the things that, like a rental car or something, eventually one day you're going to realize you have a bunch of money, and you're never going to send me an email saying, Jack, you stupid jerk, because of you, I have all this money I don't know what to do with. You know what happened in about 5 years? I started getting emails that said, Jack, you stupid jerk, because of you, I have all this stupid money that I don't know what to do with. Seriously, we're going to buy a farm. Yeah, it works. And it starts with saving money by using things like cutting your cost of food. It's that simple. Where do you get your news? That's under your control. I mean, if you get your news from CNN, I don't know how you haven't, like, freaking, you know, swallowed half a bottle of pills. And if you get your news from MSNBC, I don't know how you haven't slit your wrist and jumped out a window while you were bleeding to death just to make sure it took. And Fox News ain't that much better. So the other side of that is, if you get it at all, I mean, I've realized how stupid the average person is by just paying attention to what, instead of the people I follow, just what people are saying on social media. How nonsense, especially TikTok and X. Oh, my God. Blah, blah, blah happened. Like, no, it didn't. Trump, blah, 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 blah. No, he didn't. Yes, he did. Well, show me where it happened. This guy said so. And the claims are so ludicrous, and yet people believe it. And I used to say, how stupid is that person? And now I say, how stupid are we as a country? Because we've allowed these institutions that are known liars to become perceived authority. I don't know that we even need to look at the news anymore at this point. I mean, maybe the economic news and whatever, so we can manage our investments and stuff based on pattern recognition, filtering the bullshit out, making a real clear determination. But I'll tell you why they hate Bitcoin. Bitcoin's kind of even ruined that. Unless you're leveraged long into some stupid bullshit with your refinanced in a fart ass coin or whatever it is. By the way, there is a fart coin and an ass coin, I'm just saying. You don't really have to worry about it. You just keep stacking your money and going on with your life. These are people that live longer because they stress out less. So where you get your news, or even if you bother to pay attention. And I'm going to tell you that you could probably, you know, I use a site called Ground News. I have to have visibility into the news because of what I do here on the podcast. I have to. Some of you say you get your news from me. I'm like, okay, that's probably pretty good. Still just my opinion. At least I tell you that, though. But I can go on Ground News every day. I can look at the for me role. I can look at the blind spot on the left and the right. I can, of the headlines that catch my attention, read the summaries. Of the summaries that catch my attention, read the source article. If it's worthy of further research, do a little bit of research. Stay abreast of everything meaningful going on in the world. It takes me 15 minutes a day. I don't need a TV set telling me anything. I don't care what retards are saying on X and Facebook. You do well to emulate that. Maybe go further than me. If you don't have a podcast that invokes some of this stuff, most of it you don't need to know. I remember I read a book many years ago. It was a business book. I don't remember who wrote it. But the author said that when Princess Diana was killed, he and his wife were on a cruise ship in the middle of the ocean. I think they were going to Hawaii or something like that. I mean, they were way out. They were like multiple days at sea out. And they heard instantly. And this is before everybody had a cell phone and before everybody was on the internet and they had internet cafes. This is like the 1980s or early 90s at this, whenever she died. I don't remember when Diana died, but it was a long time ago. And they knew within minutes that it happened. Some way or another, information came in and it was. So what his point was, if something, because that wasn't even that big of a deal, really. I know some of you are like emotionally attached to it or whatever. I don't know. Some fantasy ass bullshit you have from freaking Disney or whatever. But in the end, it didn't really affect the world. So if something really big had happened, you would know. Somebody will tell you. Don't sit there and act like you paying attention actually is critical to anything, because it's not. Developing pattern recognition for politics, marketing, etc. I have people come to me all the time. Well, look at this. Like, that's bullshit. How do you know? I read the title. It said, comma, experts say. I already know it's bullshit. If I'm interested in why it's bullshit, I'll take some time and figure it out. But I know when it says, comma, experts say, comma, study suggest, comma, new report confirms, it's almost always bullshit. And it almost always doesn't affect my life. If it says I should eat soy, I'm still not going to do it. And if it says I should eat meat, I'm already doing it. I've got that worked out. I don't need your input on it. If I decide I need, when what I'm doing isn't working for me anymore, then I'll go out and do something else. I'm more worried about self-education. I don't need the news to educate me. So that's a problem. The news used to be, hey, gold is up, silver's down. Here's your top stock producers and top stock losers today. This is where the president went and what he said. This is a new laws that were passed. And a dog got hit on the street if it's small town news. And here's the obituaries. Now the news is an attempt to educate and inform, which really is an attempt to market. The strength of marketing in the news is stronger than the strength of the news in the news. Everything you see on the news is angled toward getting your attention to flow and your money to flow into specific directions and or your political support to flow into specific directions. It's not designed to inform you. It's designed to educate you, and education does not mean accurate. I can educate you poorly, and you will be well educated if we measure it by a test of the material. I can tell you that orange is blue and blue is orange and give you a test, and you can identify them incorrectly, but correctly according to the source, and if I grade you to the source, you just got an A. That's the news, and that's marketing. I just heard from someone, good friend of the show, who said, you know, last week you and Bones kind of inferred that the parasite thing isn't what it's made out to be, and it's just, you know, bullshit or whatever, and this spring or some winter, I was diagnosed with a parasite infection. My doctor prescribed me something. I took it, and a bunch of good things happened when I got rid of the parasitic infection I had. That's what Bones and I said, bro. That's what we said. What we're saying, though, is that when you have something like this, so now I can market this package of herbs that are not really harmful but are overpriced, but you need a parasite cleanse. And I'm marketing to you on Fox News on a commercial sandwiched by two pharmaceutical commercials, and I know that some portion of you are going to be anti-pharmaceutical, and I'm sitting in the middle of that, and you have a health problem you don't trust your doctor with, you're going to buy my shit. Now, how can I know that you need a parasite cleanse? I've never seen you, met you, and I'm never even going to care who you are. You're a number in my database. That's pattern recognition. When someone claims to have an answer to a question that you didn't ask, And you never had until they gave you the question. That's pattern. The pattern is one of the most fundamental sales and marketing formulas on the planet. It's the cash formula. Spells cash. Create, agitate, solve, help. And most TV commercials follow that system right there. Create a problem. You have parasites in your body. Oh, do you have any of these symptoms? Here's like 40 symptoms. Everybody has two or three. You could have a worm up your ass, right? This bottle of shit that I have 37 cents in that costs you $37, and I'll give you a free one. Just pay extra shipping and handling. Call now, right? You agitate the problem, though, first. You're like, hey, you know, and this is all the terrible things that can happen if you don't address this. But here's your solution. Call this number or go to this website. We'll give you two of them. Create, agitate, solve, help. Once you know that, it's like the dude in the Matrix. You can't not see it. It's like blonde, brunette, redhead. And I know the steak's fake, but I don't care. It's kind of like that. Next, eliminate all toxic debt and have good management of what we would call functional debt. I'm not as anti-debt as I used to be. And there's some things that have changed that. Part of it, though, is, unlike Dave Ramsey, I've matured in my message. I'll put it that way. I like Dave, a lot of things about Dave, but in the end, he hasn't matured in his message. What we shared in common is I was so hard on debt because the person that's in debt that will defend the debt they have is a lot like a drug addict. Like, if you are not a drug addict, odds are you can use a little bit of a substance here and there and be fine. But the person that's addicted has got to admit they're an addict, hit the bottom, and quit stone cold. And so there is a propensity to excuse debt that is inexcusable, like, oh, I don't know, you got a Sears credit card back in the day and went out and bought a stereo system for $400. And when you did the math, you'd already paid $600 and you still owed $300. That debt cannot be defended, and it has to be, you can't spend any more money in any form of debt at all until that is dead. Anything you buy on credit that does not last in value, anything that's a consumable or a disposable, no, it has to go. And then when you do have debt, it has to be managed properly. And that includes assessing the purchase relative to your ability to service the debt and what the debt does for you long term. So a mortgage is a good debt unless it's 50% of your income. And it is not a good debt. But all the houses are, I don't care. The math doesn't math. But then I can't buy a house. Then you can't buy a house yet. The yet part is important. But then I'll never have enough money. Then you don't have a plan. Because if you had a plan, you'd figure out how to have enough money. There's a lot. And the plan can take many forms. The plan can take many forms. The plan could be a better job. The plan could be eliminate all debt and save up for a large down payment. The plan could be I'm going to buy a house that's less than I want it to be, make it better, move out and rent it, develop an underlying asset that I can leverage to buy the next house. I'm going to buy three houses before I live in one long term. The plan could be I'm going to move to a place where homes are less expensive. There's a lot of plans. But the plan cannot be, as long as I can trick the bank into giving me the money, I'll have a house, and that's better than not having a house. That's a dumb plan. That is not good management of functional debt. So whatever debts you have, they have to be function. There has to be, what is the reason? I don't have another choice is not a good reason. It's almost never right either. Because I'm leveraging an asset that I don't want to sell that appreciates more quickly than the cost of the loan. That's a fucking perfect answer. By the way, that's a billionaire's answer. And with Bitcoin, we can move into that realm eventually. At least many of us can. Where do you live? This can affect your house, but it can affect a lot of other things. There's a lot of other things it can affect. The person who says, I want to have, you know, 50 acres. Do you really? Do you know what you're going to do with it? Does it make sense? That same person might be able to find a little bitty home on a half an acre that's near a lot of public resource land and start hunting, fishing, foraging, stuff we're going to talk about later, and significantly cut their grocery bill and their housing bill at the same time, plus the stress out of their life. Well, I can't get as good a job there as I can here. Maybe you can't. Maybe you can. Have you even figured out if there's any way for you to do the remote work thing? Or have you figured out that, yeah, you can't get a job that pays that well, but if you hate your job anyway, can you improve your standard of living by relocating and taking an income of less but more rewarding? It is, and here, Aaron right now is saying something. Bought 13 acres and it's daunting. I have 3 acres. The older I get, the more daunting it is. I busted my ass this weekend. Right? And I'm an old man, and my wife took me to a freaking, I enjoyed it, by the way. We went to a Diamond Rio concert Saturday night, didn't get home till 11. Like, I'm all, oh, 11 o'clock, the dogs are like, what the hell's going on? Like, what are you guys doing out that late? You know, come in and let us be. And 11 used to be when I was getting ready to go out. And I worked all weekend, and my legs were just sore after that, you know, and I'm coming home, and like, oh, this sucks. But I had fun. But, yeah. I have 3 acres, and it's daunting. But my bigger point here is, does the place you live really do something for you? I mean, I do look at it sometimes and think, you know, like, man, when I lived in Pennsylvania, in my grandparents' house when I was a kid, like, we had enough room for a garden, the soil was perfect, the climate was perfect. I could go hunting and fishing without a car. I'd pick up my gun or my rod and walk out of the house. A bit of a long walk. Usually it was beneficial to take a bike or something. But that type of ability to do that, we leveraged that to the hilt back then. And I'm going to tell you that we had a huge deep freezer. And we ended up eventually with 2 of them. And they would be stuffed by like Thanksgiving, Christmas. Stuffed. They were probably at least 70% of what was in those was like frozen vegetables and frozen meat and fish that came from hunting and fishing. Where you live has a big factor on that. Again, I'm going to talk a little bit more about the hunting and fishing, but it also has, again, income, stress level, safety, expense. You know, one of the things I don't like living about in Texas is my electric bill. Electric rates are cheap, really, compared to the rest of the country, but the amount of electricity to keep a big house cool in a place that's as hot as it is here for as long as it's hot here, sucks. It sucks. At least out in West Texas, too, where even it's a little bit hotter, you can use like things like evaporative coolers to keep your home cool. You ain't doing that shit here either. That does not work here. That does not compute. So there is something with where you live. It changes things, and you control that. I'm stuck. No, you haven't figured out how to change your situation yet. Remember what I always say. Never say it must be nice or I can't. Those are loser phrases. Those are loser phrases. One more time. It must be nice, right? Usually that means somebody else has and you wish you had it, or I can't have. They are not bad things, whatever. They are loser fucking language. They lead to losing. They must be banished. I don't care about the word fuck, but I can't. That is profane. That is profane to think that way. Because what you've just done is say, you know what? God gave me this 3 pounds of organic matter in my bone skull, the most powerful self-learning computer in the world, and I've decided how do I live somewhere other than here is too big a challenge for it. Billions of fucking people do it every year, but I can't. You can, if you want to. How can I? You also control your diet, your exercise level, and your time of contemplation. And when I say time of contemplation, I'm trying to be very broad. I don't do a lot of big tent stuff, but in the world of spirituality, I want to be as big tent as possible. I don't care what your religion is. I don't care what you believe. As long as what you believe does not lead you to believe that it's okay to hurt other people, you believe whatever you want to in your head, in your soul, in your heart. However, it should be something significant enough that at least once a day you can sit somewhere. And whether it's through prayer or meditation or simply thought, contemplate it. Contemplate it. There's times I'll sit in the woods and just watch nature do its thing. It's funny, too. You sit in the woods for long enough, even if you're dressed like I am right now, like a t-shirt and shorts, No camo. You just clear the leaves from around a tree so you're not making noise you're not supposed to once you sit down. Plop your ass down and lean up against that tree. It takes about 10 to 15 minutes and nature just starts to do its thing without you. Birds come back, squirrels run around, whatever. Deer walk through. And you just watch nature work. And I think the creative force behind this is beyond what can be, you know, understood. And in that contemplation, I find peace. I don't care if you're in a church praying. I don't care if you're in a lotus position going om. I don't care. But at some point every day, there should be some point that you freaking stop long enough to think outside of self. Outside of self. Do you know that that's a problem we're making worse right now with kids? With these freaking devices? Right? You know why that kid that's in that device or yourself when your spouse is talking is in that device? Do you know why they don't hear you? Even though you're right here. You're talking louder than I am. Hey, kid. Huh? What? Do you know why that happens? Do you think it's just addiction? It's center focus. What happens is they become focused on the thing that's important to them and them alone in that moment. Whether it's finding a toy to ask you to buy it or rage scrolling on social media or anything in between. It's about you when you're in that moment. You think it's about others because you're in a window to other people, but it's all fictitious. It's all fake. It's all on a screen. It's all about becoming so internally focused through what looks like an external focus that what you want in that moment is more important than the rest of the world. Man, if we could just figure out how to get people to focus like that on actually getting the shit they really want. You know, you watch I don't put anybody down. I'm all for creating these channels and making money off of it. I think we should. We should go from consumers to creators, as many of us as possible. But when I see these, and I like to watch their channels too, but it's kind of like I'm doing something else and I can't be fishing, right? I know there's a shitload of people watching Brant, my buddy Angler Up with Brant on YouTube, watching him fish. Go fishing! Let's sit there and watch this dude. Go fishing. Kids watching other kids play. Go play. Go play. Contemplation pulls us out of that. Then we can refocus, and then when we look up, we're like, wow. It's the same effect of going on a news fast. You go on a news fast for about 3 or 4 weeks. Try this if you've never done it for me. Do this here. For the next just 15 days. Well, today's a Monday. Let's do it, not this next Monday, the following Monday. So 2 weeks. This is my challenge to anybody that's never done a media fast. Starting right now. Until 14 days from now. So if you listen to this episode the day it's published, it's Monday. It'll be next Monday. You are not allowed to watch the news, partake in any media. If you check Facebook because your family puts kid pictures, that's all you're allowed to look at. If you see something that starts to get you, you got to put it down. No media for 2 weeks. Then sit down, put your favorite news channel on and watch it for 15 minutes. You will feel like freaking space aliens invaded your brain. You won't even know what to do with it. This happens to me, and I know it happens, because every time I go on vacation, I don't pay attention to anything when I'm on vacation. I don't do shit. Right? I come back, and I start listening to the news, and I'm like, what the hell is going on? I remember the peak of COVID's. I was in Florida. On the beach, Sanibel Island, fishing, walking with my wife, drinking margaritas, getting a suntan. We go long trips there. We were on like day 12 of this trip. And my wife sent me up to the room to get something for her. And apparently she'd gone to the room before me and turned the TV on and was like flipping through the channels, and she just left it on, I think, CNN. Well, this is when they were claiming that like everybody in Florida was dying. Now, I'm looking at the beach. And the beach is full of people and everybody's happy and nobody gives one shit about what's going on at all. And I walk in and there was some big event going on. They're showing giant lines of people supposedly getting tested in Florida. And they're showing pictures of the hospital are solely crammed with people, but there's no one actually in them. They're showing all that shit. And it sounded like World War III, the zombie apocalypse, and a plague. The bubonic plague came back and it was person to person contagious and there was no defense against it. All at once, centered in Florida. That's what it sounded like on CNN. Because I'm sure that was being broadcast to all the affiliates not in Florida, because if you're not in Florida, well, shit, it's really bad in Florida, right? I'm literally standing in my room, and I'm looking out the window, and I'm looking at the TV, and I'm looking out the window, and I'm looking at the TV, and I'm like, am I in bizarro land? Like, this TV has a camera pointed at another universe. There's Florida right there. There's what they say Florida looks like. They're not the same. And in that moment, I stopped for a second, and I laughed. And I said, that's always the case. And you tell people that all the time, but even you forget it. It's really important to start thinking outside of that world. And it starts with contemplation. It also starts with your diet and your exercise level. I don't care if you lift weights. I don't care if, like me, you like to hit a heavy bag. I don't care if you like to walk. I don't care if you like to run. Do something. Move. Go move. It's too hot. Go to the fucking mall. There's still one around you and walk it. We don't have a mall. Go to Home Depot or Lowe's. I've figured it out that the average Home Depot or Lowe's is a bit over a quarter mile if you circumnavigate it. Four times is about a mile and a half, actually, at the average Lowe's or Home Depot. It's air conditioned. You can look at shit. You can even go much, instead of just circumnavigating, go up and down the aisles. I've never done that. It'd be interesting. Like, if you go into an average Home Depot, break over to one far wall, go all the way to the back, all the way up, all the way to the back, all the way up, and do every single aisle, and then come back to where you entered, how far is that? I bet that's damn near a mile. I bet it's damn near a mile. If it's not a mile, it's probably like three quarters or something. They'll do that twice. And think about things you can build even if you don't spend any money while you're doing it. Move. Go do something. You control that. You know, and then what you eat, you control. I don't want to get on a soapbox. But I'm going to tell you, the book I'm going to have for you today, if you read that, you'll change your diet. I'm not going to tell you what it is right now. It's a book about economics. And you'll read it one time and you go, fuck that, I ain't eating that shit no more. When you find out the truth about it, it's the item of the day today, so I'll tell you later. But I will tell you that a vast majority of food that we eat is not food for humans. It is not food that belongs in the human body. And most of the things that we eat today, when it was initially introduced, your grandparents and great-grandparents said, fuck that, I'm not eating that, and I'm not feeding that to my kids. Margarine. Margarine, your grandma did not want that shit in her home. At all. If you're really young, okay, maybe it was your great-grandmother. But I promise you, my grandmother thought it was the devil. And she said, they'll never convince me to eat that crap. Right? And for my grandmother to say crap, that's like me saying the F word three times in a row. I mean, she didn't say things like that, but when she really meant it, then she said it, okay? This is a woman that went to every holy day of obligation, mass every week, and usually multiple times a week. And I will never eat that crap, and they can't get me to eat that crap, and you shouldn't eat that crap either. That was her opinion of it. She wasn't wrong. When they first introduced it, they called it butter because people wouldn't buy it unless they called it butter. They actually passed a law that prohibited them from dyeing it yellow so that it wouldn't be deceptive and look like butter. And that's just one thing of many. Most of the food that we eat, if you don't have to refrigerate it, and it's not like a dried meat product, you probably shouldn't be eating it. If it lasts 6 months on a shelf, you probably shouldn't be eating it. Your food does not last 6 months on a shelf if you're a human eating what humans are supposed to eat. I'll leave it at that for now. You control what you eat. Even if you're going to eat something more, you know, grain-centric or whatever, if that's what you want to do, fine. Man, you still control what you eat. If it comes in a bag or a box, you probably shouldn't be eating it. You want bread? Bake your bread. Sourdough, by the way. Next. Your sleep and rest schedule. You control that. I'm going to highlight that, Daniel, that comment you just made. Tried to get away from me there. All right. We're going to talk about that later when we talk about the book. And guys, if you have a question or comment, put word question or comment in all caps and I'll get it at the end. And if you super chat me for even the buck, it automatically stars it. I didn't create that rule. StreamYard did. It just happens. And I don't see that well when I'm by myself with one eye. Because I always have only one eye. All right, anyway, your sleep and rest schedule, you control this. And it's very easy to let this go sideways. Well, I had a lot of things to do. Everybody has a lot of things to do. With certain exceptions, like a Diane Murillo concert with your wife, there should be a time at night that you go to frick to bed. It's time to go to bed. Go to bed. And whatever your sundown ritual is that helps you get to sleep, fine. And if you can find something, by the way. One of the reasons I read so much like sci-fi, Star Trek books and shit like that is it takes me forever to get through one. Like the book I'm reading right now, I'll be done with it by the end of the week, easy. But a Star Trek book might take me a month because I start reading it and it's kind of interesting. And about the fifth time that I slide the screen, the eyes start to get a little heavy, and about five more, and then it's like done. And that's my way. I'm not saying that'll work for you. I'm saying that's what will work for me. For some of you guys, what won't work for me might work for you. If you read something very intellectual or economics-based or something, or a true history or something, like, you might bombard the shit out. You're like, okay, it's interesting enough. I'm going about it, right? Where me, if I'm reading that, I'm thinking, I can do a show on that. Like, that does not help me wind down. So find what helps you wind down if you need to do that. And a lot of times, one of the ways that really will help you get to sleep is exercising every morning, because it puts your body into a positive flow state throughout the day. And you, at the end of the day, because there was some physical exertion, assuming your job's not physically exerting, at the end of the day, your body feels like it did something. So your mind is willing to let go. If you haven't done anything all day, all you do is sit in a chair all day long, you never get physical exertion. One of the reasons you have trouble going to sleep is your mind is and your body are still like, we didn't do anything. We didn't do anything. Your mind's stressed because you did all kinds of shit intellectually, but physically you didn't do it. You're not designed to not do things. Look at the way you're built. Have you ever thought about the marvel of the human body in the way that you're built? You're designed to walk everywhere you need to go. You were not physically designed to get in a car or on a bike, you know, or a motorcycle or whatever, or a train or a plane. You weren't physically designed. I'm not saying they're bad. I'm saying your physical design was not part of it. Your body was not built to sit in a chair like this so you could drive a car. We put the chair in the car like this because the physical body feels good in this position. We designed the vehicle, not the body. We designed the vehicle to fit the body's needs. It's much easier to control a car and go long distances seated than standing. No, we don't build a car where we're standing up. You're also a lot more likely to go through the fucking window if you're standing up driving, right? So we built the car to match the body. The body was not made to match the car. So if you look, like, you have 10 fingers. There's actually very few creatures that can do what you do with your hands. These opposable thumb things, right? You got monkeys and shit. A few other things that have things that are kind of hand-like. And then look at your feet. You're bipedal. It's a fancy-ass, you know, intellectual word for meaning you walk on two legs. Really nothing else is. Monkeys and apes, some of them will go bipedal, but that's not their primary means. We're the only thing that really walks upright, that survived anyway. Cro-Magnon walked upright. That's why some other hominoids that bit the dust on the evolutionary trail that walked up. But we're the only ones left. We have a huge brain relative to our body size. Our brain is fucking huge, even compared to large animals with a bigger brain relative to the size of our body. We are made to look like a predator and act like a scavenger, and be horticulturist, be communal, and be independent. We are a contradictory species. Most species are ideally like a pack or pride or flock species or an independent species. They come together enough to mate and raise babies, and that's it. One or the other. We do both. We are made to move. We are made to pick things up. We are made to explore. If nothing else, walk every freaking day and get your sleep. Sleep and rest. When we do the exercise, we get the sleep and the rest. And that should be on a schedule. And it has to be on a schedule because we broke something in our society. Circadian rhythm guided by the sun and the moon. even in the days of campfires and all, light only did so much. Like, if you ever sat around a campfire, it is not like turning a light on in a room. Even when we got to the point where we had little lamps, little oil lamps and shit, like, if you ever sat in a room with lamps, oil lamps or candles, it's actually very peaceful. But it's not like turning a light on. The fact that we can turn on a light or turn on a stream with bright lights that look like outside, even when everything in the room is dark, that's fucked us up to a degree. We're, our compensation for it isn't burn the TV. It's have a sundown ritual and get enough physical activity and put ourselves into the mindset of it's dark, go to bed. It's light, wake up. You know? Can you control this? Investing in alternatives. Yes, that's Bitcoin. Yes, that's precious metals. I don't see a better place for your money right now. Any money that you don't have, like, invested long-term into some sort of an equity, and maybe even then, right? But definitely, if it's just cash, cash is trash. I don't see a better place than Bitcoin. Second best, I would say, is gold. Third best, I would say, silver right now. And the reason is that silver doubled very quickly. And I smell correction coming sooner or later here. Now, I'm not saying it's going to go back down to, you know, $16 or something. But I think it's really possible for you to ape ass into silver right now and end up, you know, losing 20, 30%. Pretty quickly. Long term, it's still fine. Cash? The plan for cash is to trash. Right? It's not just cash is trash. The plan for cash is trash. You have an organization that controls the flow of money that it has a stated goal of devaluing the money every year. They do really good at it. They always exceed their target. You ever think about it that way? The target for the Federal Reserve is to keep inflation at 2%. Now, if I give you a sales goal to grow your market every quarter by 2%, and you grew it by 6%, we'd say you're a hell of a producer, wouldn't we? If you look at it that way, the Federal Reserve's an amazing success. They devalued the frickin' dollar by 99% since 2013 or 1913. Perfect. Good job, guys. Good job, guys. You're exceeding all expectations. That's the plan for your cash. So, yes, those alternatives, but also skills and tools. Like, one of the skills we don't really teach anymore, and I don't do it myself because I don't find that it actually saves money anymore, is like changing your own oil. But it's a good thing to know how to do. But just basic repairs. Basic small engine repair. Like, how to clean out the carburetor and do an oil change on a lawnmower. You know, that can save you hundreds of dollars over a couple years. There's so many things, how to grow your own food, and then tools to do work with. To me, a tool is an asset. That's why I like to buy good quality tools relative to the use case. So if I'm buying a tool, a power tool for me, DeWalt is more than good enough. But by the way, I love DeWalt personally because I don't like having multiple platforms. I like having one platform of tools. But so is Bosch. You know, so is Rigid, and your favorite brand to whatever it is, unless it's some low-end garbage shit, right? But I might, even within the brands, go to a higher tier of tool if I was a contractor that did work every day instead of a DIY at-home guy who uses, you know, some tools I use at least once a week and some tools I use once a quarter. So relative, but I want good quality tools. When it comes to hand tools, I want good quality hand tools. Good quality hand tools. With hand tools, there's no reason that my grandson someday should have my tools. No reason at all that shouldn't be the case. That's an investment. And then the knowledge of how to use them, those skill sets are investments. You learn how to fish, you have a skill set that provides food. Teach a man to fish versus giving a man a fish, right? There's a reason for a lot of these sayings, right? So that's another thing you control, your investments, and get into the alternative world and then expand your investments beyond just what you can put on a piece of paper and quantify in dollars. Next, you have control over whether you build a business, have a side hustle, create income from other sources. Some people, you know, is it a side hustle? It's up to you to call it what you want. But if you did what I said at one point today, which is you buy a property that's in need of repair, go live in it while you fix it up. Get it to where it's fixed up enough to now be marketable at a profit. Get a tenant, move out, and do it again. You can do that while working a job. You can do that while working a job. You need to live somewhere anyway, and buying your second house is easier than your first. Everybody has to rent now. Well, then why don't you become a landlord? That's not right for me. Maybe it isn't, and maybe you shouldn't. I'm just suggesting that, have you considered it? Have you considered that as an option? And if not, how can I? That is the most powerful question you can ask yourself. How can I? Those three words, and then followed by, get out of debt, lose weight, improve my health, start a business, improve my net worth, whatever it is. And then laser focus on one or two things until you get those in motion and going right, and then add something else. Incredibly powerful. It's up to you. You know, talking about starting a business will not start a business. Talking about the fact that some people make money and some people lose money as drivers for like Uber or Lyft doesn't really affect you, right? Most of them lose money on paper, and that's a good thing. If you can make money and tell the government you lost money, that's a good thing. That's the magical power of being rich and not paying taxes. It's often done with real estate and other leveraged debt. That's how you do that. It's how you create cash flow that has no tax consequences. You can learn that, or you can choose not to. You can choose other options. I mean, I know people that literally put a few $100s in their pocket every month, hand loading from other people. It's illegal. No, it's not. Not the way they do it. If you put up ireloadforyou.com and you start doing custom loading online, taking orders online, and doing it that way without an FFL and other certain things you're supposed to do when you do that, that's illegal. When you tell your friend, oh, you want some more loads? Yeah, I need you to pay for the powder and the primers and everything. And he says, and yeah, here's an extra $30. He's just doing a favor for a friend who also happened to give you some money. If you're stupid about it, it's illegal. I'm just saying there's ways to make money. People make money making compost. There's a lot of ways to do it, by the way. People make money making compost with worms, selling the compost and the worms. And they make more money on the worms than they do on the compost. That could be you. Should you do it? I don't know. Maybe you're not right for it. Maybe you don't have the, yeah, whatever. So you don't have. You have something. Yeah, I'll tell you what, you have more than I had when I was 20-something. When I was like 21, 20, I did dick shit. First of all, a lot of things that people have today, I didn't have them, not because I couldn't afford them, because they weren't there. I didn't have access to podcasts that opened up a whole world for me. Didn't have access to things like YouTube that showed me how to do everything I ever could imagine I ever wanted to do. I didn't have data on demand from everything. I didn't have a fucking AI unit that could do the work of a fucking marketing team in an hour, and it would take the team 2 weeks. I didn't have any of that shit. You have that. Do something. What do I do? I don't know. I'm not you. If I tell you to do it, I'm your boss. I don't want to be anybody's fucking boss. That's why I run this by myself. I built what I want. I'm challenging you to go build what you want. There's a long road between there and now to work really hard. Yes, you will, young man or woman. Yes, you will. You will have to work so fucking hard, and you might not have any idea what you're working for right now. Then do the best you can with what you have. Make as much money as you can. Save as much money as you can. Think about your future all the time and keep asking yourself, how can I? And keep asking yourself a question, what do I want? And the number one way to figure out what you want is to start with what you don't want. I've had so many people sit down and talk to them, but what do you really want? And they just hem and haw, and they think they have an answer, but you realize it's so not focused. It's so, like, ethereal, right? It's so symbolic. It's nothing like, I want this, 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 and this. But you say, okay, let's just take a break from that. What do you not want? I don't want stress. Great. So you want stress free. You want freedom from stress. Let's put that down on the one. I want to get rid of this debt. Okay? You want surplus income. And better control of your spending habits. I don't want to live in this house. Why not? It's too small. You want a bigger house. Why do you want a bigger house? So I can. Well, you want those things too. What else don't you want? I don't want to work for this company anymore. Okay. Probably guess what you want then, but let's be more specific. Why don't you want to work with it? It doesn't pay enough. Okay, you already have that one. Circle second. What else? Like, if it paid better, would you? Not really. Okay. Your boss. All right. What about your boss? Micromanagement. Oh, you want freedom. You want creative freedom in your life. Put that down on what you want. It's so fucking amazing how, like, the onion just starts peeling. When you ask people what they want, they never know. They seldom know. If they've not done this work, they definitely just don't know. But when you ask people what they don't want, you're very in touch with the things that make you unhappy. And here's two things that can happen. You discover the thing that you think made you unhappy really isn't a problem, or it is. That's the first thing. The thing you say you don't want. Okay, what's actually, is the thing the problem, or is there a problem causing the thing? Is that a symptom, or is it the disease? If it's a symptom, we need to keep diagnosing until we get down to the disease. Then we can figure out what we don't want. Once we know what we don't want, we know whatever the opposite of that is what we do want. Shazam, man. It's like magic. And I'm telling you, when you ask yourself the question, what don't I want, it just pours out of you. I'll tell you right now, for most people, especially if they hadn't heard, you know, what, an hour and 10 minutes so far, what I'm talking about, if it's an experiment, we're paying you $100 a year for 2 hours, and you don't know why. You walk in, it looks like a classroom, desks. Everybody sits and takes a desk seat. Guy walks in and puts one piece of blank paper on every table and one pencil. And says, I want you on that paper to write all the things that you don't have in your life that you want. You're going to look at people and look like they're taking a calculus test while taking a shit. I mean, just, okay, everybody put that paper down. Put out another piece of paper. Write everything you don't want. It's just gone. They're just writing away. Everything that's in your life you don't want in your life. Okay, now make the conversion. A very simple exercise. Most people won't do for the same reason they don't want to get on the scale or whatever, because they don't want to know how bad the situation is. You can't be afraid of it because you can't fix it until you evaluate it. And it doesn't matter if it's somebody else's fault. It's your responsibility, right? Everything is your responsibility, even if you didn't do it, even if you didn't cause it. No one's coming to save you. Hunting, gathering, fishing, and growing your own food. I'm only going to say so much about that because I kind of hit with the where you live part. There's a huge potential here. I have some friends that I follow on Facebook from like high school that I don't really talk to, but I just see what they're doing. One's a gal, and I would have never pegged her for this. She was not the best looking back then. She's a couple years younger than me. She was like a freshman when I was a senior. So it's pretty good. She's definitely healthy. She's living carnivorous lifestyle. She's like fucking huge into mushrooms. Every day she's in a different place with hauls of mushrooms. Thousands and thousands of dollars worth of gourmet food by walking, which is good for your body, and picking them up off the ground and learning about it. That's powerful. Even a lot of you guys that think you live in the city, whatever, I can't. You can find a place you can catch bluegill and catfish. You have one meal a week of that, and your life's better. If I don't forget, I will add this dude's link next to this bullet point to his Facebook account. And he's gotten a little more conventional and more producer-ish now, but his handle is Wade Fishes, and it's FISHZ. And there's a lot of imitator accounts, so I'll try to remember to put it in there for you. This dude, just a few years ago, was addicted to alcohol and substances. What that means, I don't know, because I haven't seen him reveal exactly what that is yet. He did not have his kids in his life, and he was divorced. He started a channel. All his channel, Deli Shoes, that's who it is right there, Deli Shoes, right? He starts this channel. Apparently he must live near some marina or something that he knows how to catch catfish in, because most of his early videos are all just catfish. A busted-ass old Coleman stove, crank that, right? And a fillet knife, get the meat. That's his whole shtick. And all he would do is catch these fish and cook them up on his little Coleman stove. These videos are like 2 minutes long, like TikTok-length videos, and all different creative ways to cook them. Now, not only as a creator did he rebuild his whole life, but you think about the fact that this guy is eating fish at least a couple times a week, and sometimes he'll cook stuff from the store and whatever instead, but he's getting all that fish basically for free. Today he's driving a big, beautiful truck with his branding on it. He's got his own Coleman-branded stove, his own branded knife. He's fishing with high-level fishing guys who just want to be on his channel. And it all started out with, hey, I'm broken, I'm down on my luck. He's got his kids back in his life. He's got a new apartment. He's got a nice vehicle. He's got his shit back together. But it started with feeding himself. A very, very powerful thing. I would love to have him on the show. Erin says she's getting glitchy sound. I don't know what I can do about that. Hopefully it won't get any worse. Y'all let me know about that if it gets much worse. I really would hate to stop and restart the stream right now. What I am going to do, though, is a fail-safe for the audio only. I'm going to fire up since it's just me today and we're not playing any videos. My backup microphone, and that way the rest of today's episode will be dual recorded, which is I should have been doing from the beginning anyway. But anyway, Wade is a really cool dude. I'll see if I can add that to the show notes for you. Next up, holding yourself accountable for productivity and meeting commitments to yourself and to others. This is something that you also. I'm going to try something here, and hopefully I will not make this worse when I do this. All right, hopefully that'll make it better. Anyway, this is something you can do. Like, you control whether or not you meet your commitments. You control whether or not you show up on time. You control when you say, today I need to get these three things done, like Nicole Sausage is my three things, if you actually do those three things. It's incredibly important. It is more important than probably anything else. In fact, the two things I'd say that are most important to your life, and you're not going to like the first one, but it's how you manage and handle it and earn money. And the reason that one is the case is because people that tend to win with money tend to win in life. That's something I do agree with Dave Ramsey on. And the reason I say that is because the money's an instant feedback mechanism that doesn't deceive you. Right? When you are doing things wrong with money, you have a negative balance. When you are doing things properly with money, you have a positive balance. There is no way around this. But I had an unforeseen, and you didn't plan for it unforeseen. That's why. Now, I understand that sometimes things happen that are completely out of bounds. But most of the time when somebody's making that excuse, that is not what happened. It's a series of little things that cascaded into a big thing because it was never managed along the way. Doesn't make you a bad person. But how you manage your money, one of the two most critical components to whether or not you're going to win in life. And the next one is how you manage your commitments, how you keep yourself accountable. Do you give yourself certain things that need to be done every day, and then you do not allow yourself to fail in getting them done? That is incredibly important. And if you can get those two things right, you're probably going to figure the rest out. Because by having the commitment set up. And this is what I like about Nicole's three things. And I usually do more than three things every day. But having those three things must be done. It means there shall be progress. There will continually be progress. Progress shall occur. You will be ahead tomorrow of where you are today. And what that does is it pulls back. And even if like an individual day is like, because I have days where I come up, man, yesterday was a hell of a day, right? And it is, but you still made progress. And then usually sooner or later, things mellow out and you'll have peaks and valleys in there, but you'll spend most of your time being able to actually do the things that need doing beyond the things that, you know, something dies if you don't do it. It's all on you. It's 100%. There's no one else that affects that. It's in your circle of control. And then when you say no, you control when you say no. The answer to that is it's probably not enough what you're doing right now. And when I say no, I mean, you know, how many times I tell people, no, I will not come speak at your event in Alaska for free. I mean, things like that, business commitments and stuff like that. It's also like, daddy or grandpa, can I have? No. I try not to be the grandpa. Grandpa should say yes more than parents, than dads and moms, right? Grandmas and grandpas should be more likely. But I try not to be an instant no, but like, I'm always like, well, do you really need it? Why do you need it? You don't need it. Okay, well, why do you want it? Do you already have one? This is another one. What happened to the last one? Like, at least let's filter through it. But in general, I'm more talking about the business side of life. But can you take on this project? And you're going to say yes because you think you need to always say yes at work because you think that's going to get you promoted. If you work for a company, we're doing that, get you promoted for real, not in your fucking fantasies, then maybe it's worth the sacrifice this time. If you're always doing it, and you just become the person who will always take on the extra project, and it doesn't do anything for you, try saying no. Try saying no, because you might be surprised the positive reaction you'll get. Well, why not? Well, right now I have a lot of things on my plate, Bill. If you'd like to take that on, I can. However, I have this, this, and this right now. If you'd like to also have me take that on, you need to tell me which one of these three things I can drop for now. That might lead to a promotion faster than, sure, I'll do it. Because when you always say yes, you just become the guy. Well, just dump that on Jack. I just dump that on him. That's fine. It'll be okay. What have you. Learn to say no. In fact, I wrote an article not so long ago. I don't think I put it on the blog. I think I put it on Primal, on Noster, on the blogging platform on Noster. And it was like, do defer or decline. They're pretty much everything that comes at you. Those are the only three things you can do. Do it. Act on it immediately. In other words, say yes. And then whatever it is you have to do, go do that. Meet your deadline. Defer, I'm not sure. Get back with me in a week. Decline, no, I can't do that. And the problem that most people have who end up stressed out is way too many yeses and deferrals. And a lot of deferrals are that way. You keep deferring and keep deferring. And the person on the other end is like, feels like you're getting jerked around. You don't want people to feel like they're being jerked around in your life. They don't want to help you anymore. Do, defer, decline, the three Ds. And decline. Every once in a while, say no just to say no, unless you're being don't be an asshat about it. But, you know, say no to something. Then you'll be valued more when you say yes. When you always say yes, people don't value you saying yes. They started, like, your boss is sitting with his boss around a table and a bunch of other people in a meeting you're not in. And like, well, I'll get him to do it. Will he do it? Oh, yeah, he'll do it. He always does it. That's just the way that it is, man. Now, who you spend your time with. This is also in my book. Who do you spend your time with? That is something you completely control. As I said earlier, it should be people who at least in some way you want to be a little bit more like. Right? You want it to be people where you're like, there's something about this person, not everything, but there's at least one or two things that if I spend time with them and I become more like them in this way, then I'll be a better man or a better woman. And you do not want them to be people that you're like, if I become more like them overall, I'll be worse. I'll be less of a man. I'll be less of a woman. Like, I will be less valuable to my family. I will be less valuable to my community. I'll be less valuable to myself. There are people like that. I hate it for them. But just like you control whether you're that person or not, they control whether they're that person or not. I'm not saying you have to ostracize them, never see them, not be nice to them. I'm saying you do not spend your valuable fucking time with that person, period. You can't. You will become more like the people you spend your time with. So exercise that control and spend time with people who make you strive to do more and be better. We actually tend to do the exact opposite. We find people that have the same vices as us so that we can commiserate and co-excuse mate because it's comfortable. You show me a guy that drinks too much, has a great big beer belly. Odds are, unless he lives alone and drinks alone, he's got another problem then. But if he has friends, they're his drinking buddies. And they all have big beer bellies. You know it's true. You've seen it. You show me a that doesn't ever exercise, and I bet his buddies aren't gym bros. But you show me a guy that's in good shape, and he's physically active, his friends are probably physically active, and they probably do some of that stuff together. Right? Yeah, drinking buddy. Last, you control how well you manage your own discipline. Now, John Willis has a shirt. It says discipline. Doing what you hate, but doing it like you love it. That's discipline. I would tell you that my definition is slightly altered, and that is do the necessary things you hate like you love them, and do them first, right? And what I mean by that is, you know, when you get those three things, usually the thing about three things is there's subtasks within each one to get this thing done. There's like 10 steps to it. Now, sometimes those steps need to be sequential. Like, I can't do two until I do one like that. But sometimes there's things that can be different. And the one you're not looking forward to, you always try to push it off. You defer it instead of do it. The one you don't want to do it, they call it eating the frog. Eat the frog first. Get that done. Organize your priorities, and then within your sub-priorities, what is the part you're least looking forward to? When I was in sales, you know what I hated most? What every salesperson hates. Calling people on the phone and being told to fuck off. It's called cold calling. You're going to pick the phone up. You're going to make call after call after call after call. 9 out of 10 people are going to tell you to fuck off before you get done with the first sentence. It is not fun. You know what my first thing I would do is? Well, the first thing I do is check my email from the night before, because I got to the office at 8 o'clock. And when you call people at 8 o'clock, they really tell you to fuck off. I figured out that about 9 o'clock was about as early as you were likely to get a hold of a decision maker and actually get any progress. So I had about an hour of filler in there, tighten up some stuff or whatever, and my alarm would go off at 8:55, ding, and I would lock my fucking door. This is my first big sales job. I wouldn't even let my manager in. I told him, I cold call for 2 hours, 9 to 10 to 11 every day. That's what I'm doing. If you really don't believe me, stick your freaking ear against the door, you'll hear me. Unless somebody's dying or there's a fire, leave me alone. And for those 2 hours, I pounded the phone, gathered everything I could get out of that. And if I could get 2 leads in 2 hours, I was going to make a lot of money that year. I knew that. Every day, if I could get 2 leads, that's 10 a week, close 2 of the 10, and then I was going to make more money than I knew what to do with, and I did. But that was the worst part of the job, so it's what I did first relative to what was possible. That's discipline. You control that. No one else does. Now, here's my other part of it. Remember I said do the part you hate first if it needs doing, if it's necessary? But I'll add this. Just be sure it's necessary. Is it really necessary? If you have something you don't like doing in your life, and you can figure out how to not do it, and nothing gets any worse, and it's not preventing you from getting better, don't do it. That includes, I hate this, so I'm going to pay somebody to do it for me. That's another way to go at that. See, I was like 25 years old at the time I'm talking about. I didn't even think this way yet. I didn't have a Jack Spirko yell at me on the phone or yell at me on the microphone every day like you do. Young guys, I didn't have a me. I didn't have anybody expose me to this shit. You put me back in that job back then, it wouldn't even have been hard. I could have hired somebody back at that time for about $300 a week, and I could have made more money than that $300 off of that work. I could have just hired somebody. I need you to generate here's a script. That's what you do. And when you get them this far, that's a lead that comes to me. I could have paid them by the lead. They didn't even have to be as good as me at it. All I had to do was get them to the point where they were willing to talk to me so that when I went in and did my calls in the morning, instead of 2 hours, I would have spent 30 minutes and I would have only talked to people that wanted to talk to me. That was the smartest thing I could have done at the time. I was smart enough at the time. I was literally paying bonuses to project managers that brought jobs in under budget out of my own pocket. Not a lot of money, a couple $100. I'd hand them like $200 bills and hand it to them. Did expense it, didn't do anything. And they knew I didn't expense it. It meant more. I would help them with the job on the design level. I would help them with different things going through that job. And they knew that I was as vested in it as they were. Company didn't give them a bonus, but I did. I was smart enough to do that. I wasn't smart enough to hire a fucking inside salesperson to work for me as a contractor. I would do that all day today. So if I can eliminate something that I hate, especially if it's a thing that pays the least, you know what I got paid to cold call? Nothing. I got paid to close deals. So why am I spending time doing something I hate that doesn't make me any money? Because it was a step toward the thing that makes me money. But like, I get the business thing now. I didn't get the business thing when I was a kid in a turkey farm. When I was 16 years old, I worked at a turkey farm. We cleaned all the slaughter equipment at night. We did a bunch of other bullshit too, but that was the main thing we were there for. I had no idea why I was doing that, other than they said they would pay me, I think it was $12 an hour, in like 1987. That's a lot of fucking money in 1987 for a teenager. It really was. $12 an hour. I knew grown men that made a job, and I wonder, why are they hiring me to do it? I can tell you exactly why now. Because the guy that cut the turkey's heads off, the guy that eviscerated the turkey, all those people that worked on that kill floor all day, they were paid way better than I was. And they hired us to do that work during the holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas time, like a month before Thanksgiving, right up to a week before Christmas, and they laid everybody off on part-time work. Why? Because the guys that worked that kill floor on a normal workload day would spend their last hour cleaning everything up to make it perfect. Yeah. When they were busy like that, they worked late. They're on overtime. They would like half-ass clean up. And us kids would come in for $12 an hour and clean it spick and span, so the health inspector looked at it the next day and went, thumbs up, you can go back to work now and make it disgusting again. Why? Because why would you pay somebody $30 an hour to do something you could pay somebody $12 an hour to do? That's why they hired us. Because they needed to give those people 8 hours during the regular time of the year, or they wouldn't keep them. They'd go somewhere else. They'd go do another job. It's not a fun job. So they had about 7 hours of work out of them. When they give them an hour of their 8-hour day to clean up, once that went away, then you hire temporary work to come in and do the shit work, because you don't want to pay somebody 3 to 4X the value of the work. That's why. You have to take that mindset into your life, and you can be more productive by eliminating it. Eliminate it. Whether it is by straight up, I just don't do that anymore, or paying somebody to do it for you, or put a system in place that does 80% of the work so you don't have to do 20%, whatever, eliminate or reduce it. That's it. My final thoughts in the end, as I said a bunch of times today, everything is your responsibility, whether it's your fault or not. It doesn't matter. It's your responsibility. All right, real quick here at the end, I have a great product for you guys today for my item of the day. It's a book. Probably don't promote as many books as I should at tspaz.com. But this is in the Fiat series. There's three main books, right, by Saif Dean Amos. And those are the Fiat Standard, the Bitcoin Standard, and Fiat Food. And he's a co-author in this one. And he wrote this book along with a gentleman by the name of Matthew Lisiak, and it's a great book. And I'm going to tell you how I discovered this book. I always knew it was there, and it was one of those, like, I'll get to it. I kind of know where it's going. I've heard the shtick before, whatever. I saw somebody post, I think it was on Facebook or X, one or the other, and said, I read this book, and I lost 100 pounds. And the book didn't tell me anything as far as what to do. It told me what happened to our food. And once I knew what happened to our food supply, I couldn't help but change my diet. And I'm like, you know what? I probably don't need that motivation, but I'm trying to motivate a lot of people that way. I need to read this book. So I got it on audiobook. I'm like 90% done with it. I think I have like 45 minutes left on the audiobook, and it's a pretty long book. I don't even know what to say. I thought I knew how bad the problem was. Somebody here said, okay, yeah, Daniel Smith, sidebar. Jack, I watched the Food That Built America series this year on your recommendation. It was incredibly interesting and eye-opening how we got here with our food banks. There's something in this book that I discovered in this. That's why I was very understanding of it when it popped up, but I had no the Food That Built America is on regular television with regular advertising from companies like Nabisco and Kellogg's, etc. And because of that, they're only going to tell you so much of the truth. So when they did the episode on Kellogg's versus Post, the cereal companies, they talk about how the Kellogg brothers, the older one, was a believer that meat was bad for you and that it was a cause of a lot of illnesses and things like that. And he created this sanitarium, and the original Kellogg's flakes were designed like to make you not sick and make you not want to eat meat. Well, they don't tell you. Kellogg was wrapped up with the Seventh-day Adventists. Yes. And the Seventh-day Adventists at the time were the inheritors of their religion from people called the Millerites. And Miller was this person that said, Jesus is coming on this day, and everybody went out to wait for Jesus. And like every time that's ever happened, Jesus didn't show up. And like, I told y'all that no one would know, and then you know, you think you do, and you're wrong, so I'm not coming. So Jesus doesn't show up. The Millerites go into disarray. And I can't remember the lady that started the Seventh-day Adventists, but she puts cobbles it back together. And one of their main lines is meat is evil, it's bad, and it makes you sick. But more, why is it bad and why does it make you sick? Because meat enhances the sex drive and it causes masturbation, and masturbation is the cause of all the illnesses. And if you let your kid masturbate, he'll be dead by the time he's 40. No shit, I didn't make that up. And they literally had like prescribed things like parents should bind their children's hands in bed, painful forms of circumcision. If you're a circumcised kid, don't do it until they're old enough to remember it, and then don't give them any anesthetic. It will dissuade them and break the habit. Pouring carbolic acid on girls, certain part of their, you know, their genitalia, things like that. Because masturbation is bad and meat causes masturbation. This is the genesis of all this shit in America. They went on to form all of these organizations and institutions and get people appointed in places. And they locked on to people like Ansel Keys during the Eisenhower administration, who had this bullshit study, the Seven Country Study, which is flawed as fuck. Like all this shit, and the way that the fiat plays into it is government will do what's most expedient to stay in power. And the one thing that's been proven throughout history to destroy government power is food prices where people can't feed themselves. That's when motherfuckers hang from trees or light posts. That's what causes real riots, not we're going to turn some shit over the street, set it on fire, and steal a TV set. Right? Those kind of riots, politicians don't give a fuck about that. That's just political football for them. It doesn't hit them at home. When people go to the Capitol building and start grabbing motherfuckers and yanking them out in the street, right? Not taking a shit on Nancy Pelosi's desk, but dragging the Congress clowns outside. That's what, and food is what does that. So the government grabbed onto it because by reducing the cost by cheaper and cheaper foods, people would handle inflation better. And the brands grabbed onto it because they could make more money. Because you can make a lot of money taking cheap ass grain and put it into a box and puffing it full of air and sugar. And then the sugar comes and everything else. You need to read this book. I'm telling you right now, if you need that kick, if there's something inside of you that won't let you just accept that, I'm not going to say carnivore keto, natural food in the absence of grains and sugars is the way to go. If you need to find, you read this book and you will, it will do it for you. And there's a lot of economics in it, but because it attaches it to something so personal, it makes it a lot easier to read. So this is also a good book for like the friend you want to pick up Bitcoin or learn more about economics even, and they won't. We all eat. And it might be interesting to find out why your food is the way that it is. All right, moving on real quick. Let's go ahead and wrap up with a couple comments, and then we'll shut down for the day. Second Light Organic Farm says, the only people I hear talking about unable to buy a house are people with college degrees. All the tradesmen I know, including myself, own a house, even the guys in their 20s. That's very interesting. That's very interesting. And I can tell you why. It's not the tradespeople all make more money. The tradesperson is walking around with maybe car debt and maybe a little trade school debt. Maybe. Often none. Right? That's the burden they carry. And then they have income. I figure out what to do with it. Okay. The college graduate is usually walking around today, like new grads, like people that are less than 5 years graduated, $100,000, $150,000 worth of debt to service. I've heard It's usually the Marxist retard college grads saying this. But they're using it to justify something that's not justified, but it doesn't mean they're wrong about it. And that is that they'll hear somebody say something like, when I was your age, I started with nothing. And they're like, I would have been better off if I started with nothing because I have all this debt now because you told me to go to school, and I did. And they have sort of a point, but there's a point where you have to take response. Again, it's all your responsibility. But in many ways, they would be better off with nothing than with that degree that they overpaid for and the debt that goes along with it, that they'll never actually recover the cost of the debt. Second Light also says, started listening to you while I was homeless in 2016. Now I'm one of those guys that owns a farm. Thanks, Jack. That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, don't tell me about your problem. This person was homeless in 2016. Homeless. Good for you. Good for you. That's awesome. Space Girl. Ain't heard from you in a while. What has Space Girl got to say? Doctors pushed my grandmother to eat low-fat, sugar-free margarine because she was overweight. Do you think due to arthritis and other health issues? She was always in the hospital. Yeah, you have arthritis, so you're not moving. So let's eat a bunch of shit that's inflammatory. That'll fix that arthritis. It doesn't even make any sense when you really think about it. Here's the big thing I want to leave you with on the food stuff, guys. And that is, somehow, humans functioned without pharmaceuticals and without supermarkets for the vast majority of the time we walked the earth. Everybody died by the time we were 35. No, they didn't. No, they didn't. There's a reason we call them elders. They're old. Every indigenous society revered their elders, which had to, they meant they were around. Now, we did die of things that we don't die of today, like bubonic plague, right? That's an antibiotic thing, though. That's not our food. We didn't have, before all of this progress, right, we didn't have huge amounts of heart disease. If you go back to like the 1800s and early 1900s, most people that had any means at all ate tons of red meat. The number one source of calories was red meat for anybody that could afford it. They didn't have heart disease. So how do they all of a sudden start getting heart disease from something humans have eaten for hundreds of thousands of years without getting heart disease from it in 1955? And the answer is they don't. They don't. If you look at our disease progression, again, all of it goes parabolic in 71, but you can see as the diet changes, the incidence of obesity and diabetes and all these other complications come in. With each one of these changes, it gets worse. It gets worse. People eat less red meat today than they've eaten pretty much in the history of this country. We have more diabetes and more obesity than we ever had. How is it possible it meets the cause then? It's not. So anyway, all that to say, consider reading the book, and nice comments, guys. Appreciate you. I hope the audio wasn't too skippy there. I only saw a couple people say it once or twice, so I think we're overall all right. But I got the other half of it on the second recorder in case we need it. I will catch you guys. Actually, tomorrow I will not catch you guys. I got to rewind tomorrow. My grandchildren and my wife and I are going to, I don't know what. We're going to go. My wife said, can you take a day off this week? Because we got the kids and we just go do something together. I said, yes. I did not say. Remember I said to say no more often? What I said no to was the need to produce 4 shows this week. I'm going to produce 3 instead. So you'll get a rewind tomorrow, and then I'll be back Wednesday with a guest, Thursday, expert counsel, and then we'll do it all again the following week. Take care, guys. Have a great day. They said you should have a house the American way. $1 down, $1 a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way. Let me show you a better way.